Hey guys, thanks for listening in. I'm your host, Jennifer Marie, and you are tuned into the WW Daily Podcast. This is the place to tune in and listen to the latest and most important news taking place in the fashion and apparel industry. On today's show, we'll discuss our weekly recap, Rylamap's plans on the recent cyber attacks, and Donna Karan celebrates 30 years in the industry. So relax and get ready to soak up important news in the apparel industry as I bring you the latest episode of the WW Daily Podcast. Okay guys, let's start off with the weekly recap, which is just a breakdown of some quick stories that I sort of ran across during the week that I thought maybe you guys would be interested in knowing, or maybe you've come across yourself and we can just discuss. The first one is Victoria Beckham opening her first Bricks and Mortar store in London. I thought that was pretty cool because she's been out for quite some time in the industry, you know, designing for several years, and I thought it was pretty odd that she never had a store. And to be honest, it never really occurred to me that she didn't have a standalone store like a Bricks and Mortar. I just assumed that she didn't. You know, maybe they just weren't in my area. And, you know, I thought for sure she's online. She probably has Bricks and Mortar. But yeah, so she's coming out with her first store. She confirmed that to Women's Wear Daily. And she basically is saying that the store is going to be in London and it is set to showcase and come out this fall. So that's something to look out for if you're in that area, or if you're visiting that area, it would be fun to stop into her store and see what she has going on. The store will be three stories high and it's going to include her Victoria by Victoria Beckham line as well. She currently sells her line in over 60 countries and this will be, like I said, her first actual Bricks and Mortar store. She also confirmed that she recently leased office space in New York. She says that she wants to focus on the U.S. this year. So I think that there could be a possible New York location opening up soon, because why else would she be getting office space? And why else would she be interested in what's going on here in America in terms of her fashion line? And she's also mentioned in the article that she needs people on the ground so that she knows what exactly is happening in fashion, you know, in the U.S. and in New York. So hopefully we'll be seeing a new Bricks and Mortar store come out in New York. That would be really fun. So I love her. You know, I've seen her fall 2014 fashion show recently. It was good. I thought it was, I don't know if you guys have seen it yet. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Victoria Beckham Fall 2014. I really did like it. I like her shapes and her structures and how she creates her designs and clothing and how they fit the woman. It just seemed a little, I took a yawn. I mean, it seemed a little just repetitive and sort of like the same thing over and over. I thought there would, you know, there was some splashes of like sort of designs with curves and fun things like that, but here and there, which were like sort of oddly placed in my opinion. But all in all, I love Victoria Beckham. I've said it in the past before, I love her. I love the way she dresses. This particular show to me, this particular collection, it's like you see pieces in it where you're like, oh, I would wear that. I would wear that top with maybe a pair of my jeans or something like that. But all in all, I mean, it seemed, I got a little bored watching it. But I thought, as always, she always comes out with something that I'm, you know, I'll see and I'll say, yeah, there's something in there I would wear. So, which is hard because, I mean, I watch lots of fashion shows and I don't always get that feeling where I say, yeah, I would wear that, or yeah, I would wear that. With her, it's always, there's always something that I would definitely wear. So I do love her. I love what she does. I love her designs and what she does in fashion. So let's talk about Rachel Zoe not doing her fashion show. There's an article entitled Rachel Zoe Bows Out of Fashion Week. Now, I've talked about Rachel Zoe in the past too. She's somebody I want to meet at some point in my career. I love Rachel Zoe. Like, she's one of those people who I sort of idolize. I think she's a fantastic at what she does. I think there's some people who are born to do what they do, and she's born to style people. I've said that in the past. I'm totally obsessed with what she does, and I think she's amazing at her job. And, you know, she took it a step further with becoming a designer, and I think that she's done extremely well coming out with collections that make sense. So many times I think that you will, you know, see a runway show and sometimes you're like, oh, well, that's cool, but would I ever wear that in real life? With Rachel Zoe, everything she has, I would wear that in real life. I could see myself, it's real clothes for people, you know, for real clothes that you would see a woman wearing walking down the street, you know. So I love her. I love everything that she does. I love her styling. I love her collections. I love her show. So I'm a huge fan of her, her family, her gorgeous son, which she has two sons now. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. And the reason why she did bow out of Fashion Week and not do her show. But have you guys ever seen her son? I think he is seriously the cutest baby ever. Like, he should be a Gap baby, like one of those Gap babies, like on the advertisements that you see on like the billboards and in the ads. He is the cutest baby I've ever seen. Like, no joke. He has huge blue eyes. He has like reddish hair, long curly hair. And she got a little bit of criticism for the way that he looks, you know, keeping his hair so long like that. But one, he's the best dressed baby in Hollywood. If anybody wants to combat that, bring it on, because he is the best dressed baby. If you ever see that baby, he dresses better than any man I've ever seen. So he is just the cutest little man ever. And I don't think it's wrong that she keeps his hair long like that. I think it's cute and I think it's appropriate. And there's nothing wrong with keeping your son's hair long if it's gorgeous. And he's gorgeous. So I think it's perfect. So yeah, I love her. I love her little family that she has. And she did issue a statement to Women's Wear Daily talking about why she did have to move her show. And she says in quote that while I look forward to New York Fashion Week each season, I've made the difficult decision to move our fall 2014 show from February 13th in New York to a later date in Los Angeles. As a new mother, my newborn son is too young to travel with me, and I'm unable to leave him for the amount of time required to appropriately prepare for the show in New York. So the collection is said to be inspired by a Parisian woman in the 60s. The collection is a combination of French, bohemian, and mod elements. We can expect to see tailored jackets, houndstooth plaid, and textured tweeds. So I think I'm already excited to see it and to see what she has. She's one show I always watch. It's impossible to watch them all, but I have to see what Rachel Zoe does. She also went on to say that I couldn't be more excited about this collection. The market will proceed on February 10th in New York City as planned, and I look forward to be back on the New York Fashion Week calendar in September. So that was what she had to say as far as her having to cancel her show for Fashion Week, which I'm sure killed her to have to do, because I mean, having a fashion show during Fashion Week is critical for designers. But she's doing what she has to do for her family, so I salute that. She's amazing. Next, let's talk about the Fashion Fun. Now, the Fashion Fun is something that I think I just started talking about on the last podcast. And the show was created by a group of people in the industry, including Anna Wintour and Diane von Furstenberg. They have several guest judges on as well. But essentially what it is 10 designers get a chance to work alongside industry leaders and compete to be named Fashion Fun Designer of the Year. Now, the Fashion Fun has been going on for years. Essentially, the Fashion Fun was established to help up-and-coming designers. Now, Anna Wintour oversees the competition with several other judges, including like I said, Diane von Furstenberg, who is the president of the CFDA. So basically, the Fashion Fund is the CFDA and Vogue sort of working together to create this competition for designers to win a prize of $300,000 and a one-year mentorship with some of the biggest names in fashion. So it's a cool show. If you guys get a chance, check it out. I believe it comes on Wednesdays at 10 p.m. and it's fun. I mean, I just record it on my DVR and I catch it, you know, whenever I have time during the week. And it's always fun to watch. Anything that's for, you know, supporting designers and helping new up-and-coming designers is awesome. Like I said on the last show, my two favorite designers are Tome. And Tome is, let's see, I did write down the designers this time of Tome. If you don't already know them, Ramon Martin and Ryan Lobo, I believe his name is. I also recently read an article, I don't know if it was in the Women's Wear Daily magazine or not, about Tome. And I think they had gotten into a new sort of project with I can't remember the name. But yeah, they had gotten into a new project as well. And they were talked about in Women's Wear Daily about another project they're working. So they're doing well. But they're in the competition. Very chic, classic women's wear. Just very, very classic and very classy. Very classy women's wear, sort of vintagey look. That's the word I'm looking for. The other designer that I liked is Public School. And these guys are really cool. I really like what they're doing because it's kind of like streetwear meets sort of like chic menswear, if I could say chic menswear. And I really, really like what they're doing because it's hard to say that when you see something that designers are doing that it's not like anything you've ever seen before, and it's nothing like that I've ever seen before. I really, really like what they're doing with menswear. If I was a dude, I'd totally be copying everything that they're creating because I love it so much and what they're doing. And the two designers are Diawi Chow, I believe is how you say his name, and Maxwell Osborne. And they also, along Public School and Tome, all of the Fashion Fund designers recently did do a fall 2014 show as well for Fashion Week. So if you're interested in looking them up, definitely check out Tome and Public School. I think you'd be interested to see what they have going on. So for the first episode, we already discussed it. Basically, they just chose the top 10 designers. And then for the second episode, they basically just did presentations. Tome and Public School, like I said, are my favorite. And then for the third episode, which is the third and fourth one is the one that I recently watched. They did like the studio walkthroughs and the Vogue photo shoot, which is pretty awesome. And I think it's great that they get a chance to do that. That they actually get a chance to do a photo shoot with Vogue is huge. To be able to have, you know, your picture in there, that's like amazing opportunity for lots of people to see who you are and learn more about you. So I think it's really cool that they give them the opportunity to do a photo shoot in Vogue, whether they choose you as a winner or not. You know, you have your 10 finalists and they all do a photo shoot for Vogue. And then the studio walkthroughs were pretty interesting. Tome received a walkthrough by Anna Wintour, and it was hands down the most awkward like moment in television. Like it probably not the most awkward moment, but it was awkward. She walks in and she sort of is checking them out, and then it just kind of gets dead quiet. And then she just sort of walks out, and like there's really no goodbyes, or it just was very awkward. And one of the designers said that he didn't know if he wanted to cry or just vomit because he was just like so spazzed out and nervous about her being there, and then she was so awkward. So I don't really know what to expect from someone like Anna Wintour, but apparently I don't know where her mind was with the walkthrough. She could have loved it. Who really knows what she was thinking? But I just thought that was interesting that it was such an awkward moment on TV when she did that walkthrough for Tome. Nunu is another one I actually like as well. It's not really my style, but I like what she's doing. And she's from England, I believe, and she actually had a walkthrough with Diane von Furstenberg, which is pretty insane. Like, Diane is also someone in my career I would love to meet one day. I think she's amazing. The one with Diane von Furstenberg sort of cracked me up a little bit, because I think I've watched many interviews with her and I've seen her everywhere, watched her, you know, walk the red carpet and at fashion shows doing quick interviews, and she always just seems so pleasant and very zen and, you know, very nice lady. And then she does this walkthrough and it's probably the most I've ever seen her be so like personal, like on a personal level. She does the Nunu studio walkthrough and she's actually just slightly snippy. So I think it's pretty funny that she's kind of like, she's asked the designer, I think her name is Misha Nunu, and she asks her, what's your favorite thing in here? And she's like kind of telling her, describing to her what it is, and she's like, well, go get it, you know, like get up and go get it. It's just pretty funny. The other walkthrough I kind of wanted to talk about quick is public school. They seem to feel pretty good about their walkthrough, and the guy that gave them the walkthrough, his name is just sort of slipping my mind right now. I think, was it something Tosser, or I don't remember. Anyway, they had a pretty good walkthrough. They felt good about it. So I thought that was good. Another one I wanted to mention, if you guys are watching the show, hopefully you are, the guy who does the fine jewelry, he does kind of like the animals and the fine jewelry. He's also another one who, he just seems like such a nice guy. You know, he's so friendly and I really like him as a designer, and he does fine jewelry. He just seems like he's just trying to make it, you know, and I really can appreciate that about somebody who sort of, he seems like he eats, sleeps, and breathes his designs, and he really puts his heart and soul into what he does. So I can respect that, and I really like what he does. So I thought it was pretty awesome that he had a good walkthrough, and not only did he get a good walkthrough, but he also was able to get a deal with one of the other judges. His name is slipping my mind. He got Mark Allery as the designer for the fine jewelry, and one of the judges has a store, and he decided to work out something with the fine jewelry designer Mark Allery and pull his designs for his store. So he sort of got a deal already, you know, on the table, and I thought that was pretty awesome, and what a great, you know, accomplishment and opportunity to be able to have that. So like I said, Fashion Fun recorded, I want people to watch the show because I think it gives support, and the fashion industry always needs support no matter what, because sometimes I think people don't respect the fashion industry as much as they should. If you guys have time to watch the show, you should. The judges say it like they mean it, and I think it's worth watching, and we should all definitely start watching it. If you haven't already, check it out on Ovation Wednesdays at 10 p.m. WWD Podcast. Okay guys, let's jump into the first story. I want to talk about Ryla on the cyber attacks. They're basically coming together trying to figure out what to do about the recent cyber attacks on both Target and Neiman Marcus. Now, if you're unsure of who Ryla is, they are the Retail Industry Leaders Association out of Washington. Now, if you want to, you can check out their website. They have a nice About Us section. I kind of just grabbed some of the stuff that they say in there, just so you kind of can get an idea of what they do and who they are. They are a trusted source dedicated to telling the retail industry's story and informing lawmakers of the impact and consequences of the decisions they make. It goes on to say that we attribute our success to three core principles. We are member-driven, our board drives the organization, and senior executives on our councils and committees help set our priorities. The second is servicing our culture, and lastly, educate, innovate, and advocate. So that is their sort of like About Us creo, I guess you can say. a little bit about who they are and what they do. Essentially, they just keep tabs on what's going on in our industry, and they help lawmakers make decisions on how it's going to impact us being in the fashion industry and in retail. So they're on our side. They do a lot for helping lawmakers to figure out and make the best decisions for us. So basically, they are working on everything that's been going on with the massive data breaches that have been going on between Target and Neiman Marcus and others as well. But we're going to focus on Target and Neiman Marcus right now. So due to the cyber attacks on both of those retailers, Ryla is organizing a new initiative to better protect consumers shopping with debit and credit cards. So us, essentially. Target confirmed that 40 million consumers were initially affected by the massive data breach, and another 70 million consumers may have had personal data such as names, addresses, email addresses, and phone numbers stolen. So that's horrific, and that's extremely scary. But Neiman Marcus disclosed that 1.1 million payment cards may have been compromised in its data breach as well. So these two companies really got hit hard, and Ryla stepping up to try to help us out and see what we can do about feeling more secure with shopping online. There are forums also on their website, I should add, that are open to discussion for industry leaders. So if you can check out their site on ryla.org to learn more about them. Sandy Kennedy is the president of Ryla, and she made a statement to Women's Wear Daily saying, in quote, "The initiative's aim is to form a public-private partnership to address expanding cyber threats and to develop industry-wide safeguards to protect consumers' personal data." She also added, "Retailers place extremely high priority on data security and invest tremendous resources to prevent attacks, but cyber criminals are persistent and their methods of attack are increasingly sophisticated. The new initiative is focusing on three major components." And again, this new initiative is being created by Ryla for the safety of us shopping online. So this new initiative is focusing on three major components. The first one is Ryla forming a council called the Retail Cybersecurity Leaders Council, comprised of senior retail executives specializing in cybersecurity. This new council will improve security systems in the industry by sharing threat information and discussing effective solutions in a trusted forum. Second, they will lobby lawmakers to establish a national baseline and work with legislators to develop federal legislation. Now, Ryla will also focus on ways to improve payment security, including eliminating the magnetic strip technology used on credit and debit cards. So that's pretty interesting. Completely eliminating the magnetic strip. We're going to talk more about that. And lastly, Ryla will continue to press for the PIN security and chip-based smart card technology. So if you don't know what that is, we're going to get into that right now. So basically, what is the chip PIN technology? So I almost feel like I'm a little behind on the radar with this. So I looked it up to see what exactly is going on with this and what this is. This technology has been used in Europe actually for quite some time. And according to smallbiztrends.com, starting October 2015, MasterCard and Visa will recreate its credit card to have microchips in them. Consumers will use PIN numbers instead of signing credit card receipts, and consumers will insert the credit card into or wave it near the credit reader instead of swiping a magnetic strip. This chip and PIN technology utilizes multiple layers of security. Total fraud losses dropped by 50% and card counterfeiting fell by 78% in the first year after introducing smart cards to France in 1992. The United States has kind of lagged behind because replacing all the payment cards, updating ATMs to accept the new cards, and updating the terminals in retail stores all cost money. So essentially we are behind just because we don't want to spend the money on this technology, which is kind of sad because we should be on top of this, especially because it's sort of biting us in the ass now. all these years later, and now we're having all these huge data breaches and all this stuff going on. Meanwhile, Europe has been using this for over a decade, and they've had huge success with it as well. So don't be surprised to see magnetic strips go away in the future. And had they, like I said, there's going to be sort of like a chip-based smart card technology where you'll always use your PIN. So it makes perfect sense to me. It makes me happy knowing that I'm going to be better protected and have a safer way of shopping online, because we use our card not only online but in store, because we use our cards for everything. Who uses money these days? Nobody. So I think it's going to be great to have this go on, and hopefully they will continue coming up with new initiatives and focusing on how we can eliminate this issue of worrying about shopping in general. I mean, people are so worried about shopping online. Oh no, I'm afraid to shop online. I don't want to get my card hacked. Well, hell, we're in stores making purchases and we're still facing the issues of getting our, our information taken from us. So it's creating a huge issue. People are not trusting using their cards anymore. With me, I'm kind of more of a, more laid back when it comes to that kind of stuff. It's like, okay, whatever, just order me a new card. That sucks. Some people are extreme about it. They just say, forget it. Don't want to use their card anymore. They get really freaked out. So the sooner the authorities are able to nip this in the bud, the better for everybody. Stay tuned for the next story. Okay, guys, we are back with the last story for this podcast, and we're going to talk about Donna Karan celebrating 30 years in the industry, which is a huge, milestone for any designer. And I love Donna Karan. I think she's amazing, and she's somebody who I would love to also meet sometime in my career. I don't know if you've ever seen somebody on TV or watched interviews and just kind of I feel like if I ever met that person, that we would be we would have a good connection, we would get along. I feel like that about Donna Karan. My mom actually is from New York, and she has 9 sisters, and when they all get together, I mean, she seems like she would be my aunt. Honestly, she seems like she would fit right in with all of them, because she kind of looks like them, like our family, and she is from New York. She talks like them, so it's pretty funny, she just reminds me of my mom's side of the family. It's kind of weird, but every time I see her and I hear her, and also her attitude about things and sort of just her energy and her personality is very straightforward. She's kind of just a straight shooter. She says it like she means it. She just, if you could tell if a thought comes to her mind, she just says it. She has no problem cursing in interviews or anything like that. I mean, if you've never seen a Donna Karan interview, you should probably check her out and see what she's like as a person, instead of just, not Donna Karan the label, but just as a person, who she is. She's a really good person also. She does a lot of work. She travels a lot. She does a lot of work as a philanthropist, and she, is a mom, a designer. She kind of does it all. So lots of women can relate to her, and I like all the good that she does. And she has a good heart, and you can tell just by all of the things that she's into and does. So let's talk a little bit about her. In the Women's Wear Daily article that I read, she is doing an interview with someone from Women's Wear Daily. And so rather than kind of go through the interview, I just kind of looked up her history and her biography and stuff like that. So we're going to talk about a little bit of her history in honor of her milestone of 30 years. And we're going to talk a little bit about the interview as well, as it relates to her life, being a designer, as a mom, as someone who in general celebrates life and all that comes with it. So once you get to know her in her interviews and what she does, and she has a book that came out too not that long ago, and just get to know her as a person, you see that she really is about how to do better in the world, and she has a lot of dreams and aspirations that she still has yet to accomplish that she talks about as well. So I really like her. She's someone who seems like she would be like an amazing mentor. If I could have any mentor, it would be her, hands down. Hands down. She seems like the type of person who likes to help other people, which I think is also hard to find in, unfortunately, in this industry, is people who support and appreciate what other people in the industry are doing. I think a lot of times once people sort of get the boost of being in fashion and being successful in the fashion industry, they allow that to sort of change them and transform them. And you can tell that she has never changed or transformed her personality or who she is for anybody. She sort of just is Donna Karen from New York. So I love that and appreciate that about her. And we're going to kind of talk about who she is as a person. And again, if you've never really seen an interview on her, I strongly encourage it. So check her out and see what she's about. Again, I kind of feel like too, just reading into her history, that she was born to be in the fashion industry. Her mother was a model and her father was actually a designer of men's suits. So, and I also had read somewhere, I think it was on biography.com or one of those sites, that she had actually dropped out of school at 14 to sell clothes in a boutique. So I don't know how much truth is behind that. But then down the line, she was accepted at Parsons School of Design in New York. She never actually graduated from there, but she did attend Parsons. She began her career at Anne Klein, which I'm sure most of you already know. And she quickly became associate designer. She actually worked hand in hand with Anne Klein, and Donna Karen asked Anne Klein if it would be okay to sort of come up with her own, what she called, easy 7-piece collection. And she really only intended it to be created for her and her friends, but it was a very successful small collection, did extremely well, and she continued working for Anne Klein as eventually a head designer. So in the Women's Wear Daily article, they had an interview with Donna Karen, and they talked about investing in young designers. And one of the questions was, could you imagine an investor being so generous with a young designer today? Basically asking, as Anne Klein was so generous to you, do you think that today there would be designers as generous to young designers as Anne Klein was to you? And she answered that if a designer had already proved to him or herself, like I had, there's a big difference. I was able to build two brands, Anne Klein and Anne Klein 2. So I wasn't a young kid starting out who had never proven himself. So I just thought that was pretty interesting. And also on one of those biography.com sites, I noticed that she had divorced her first husband and married a second time. And her husband's name was actually Mark Karen. So I think she sort of got stuck with that last name because she had already started off her career as a, you know, I'm sure as a designer, and you know, Donna Karen had some significance to her, and maybe that's why she had to hang on to it. Sort of reminds me of like Diane von Furstenberg. I think the same kind of situation sort of happened with her, if I remember correctly. So Donna Karen left Anne Klein and debuted her first women's wear collection in 1985. Her mission was to design modern, affordable clothes for modern people. At the time, many women were sort of entering the professional workforce. So this was perfect timing for Donna Karen. It was perfect timing for her to come in and create this sort of comfortable, modern professional line. Also, in another question from Women's Wear Daily, they asked if she would advise young designers to work for someone else first. And she replied, yes, but whether it's your own brand or not, you need to own it. And I don't think she's talking about own it financially. Obviously, she's just saying, you know, if you're working for a brand, you need to own it as if it's yours. You need to work for that brand as if it's your brand. She goes on to say that she had a young designer at Urban Zen which Urban Zen is one of her newest brands that had come out. You know, she says that the designer was like a kid out of high school, and she said she's a little me. It's kind of weird. She owns it as if it's hers. The same with Jane Chung, who is also another designer for Donna Karan. She says that Jane Chung owns DKNY. She owns it. I gave it to her. She came to me saying she would like to do it, and she got it. She goes on to talk about how DKNY came about. She says that my daughter and her friends were stealing all of my clothes, and it really pissed me off. I realized that I had a bigger audience than I thought. I wanted a lifestyle for myself and for my husband, and I needed more clothes than what I was doing with Donna Karan. Jane was working for me, and she said, I'll do DKNY, and that's sort of how it came about. WWD also asked her if she saw DKNY as a lifestyle brand from the start. She replied that she described the brand as always about life. DKNY was that for the streets of New York. So basically, the way the timeline goes, in 1992, she launched a menswear collection in sort of inspired by her father and I think late second husband. And then later came DKNY, then DKNY jeans. This is something that's also sort of interesting that I stumbled across. Anne Klein, the company, had actually given Donna Karan like an ultimatum at one point, which I thought was pretty interesting considering how long she worked for the company. So WWD goes in to ask Donna Karan the question, how did Donna Karan brand happen? Donna Karan replied, well, I had this little idea. I had this idea of what I wanted to do and what was missing in fashion. Then Women's Wear Daily asks, but you wanted to do it within Anne Klein and were told no? Question mark. She replies, yes, they threw me out of Anne Klein Company. And that was it. And then Women's Wear Daily says, but they backed you. And then she says, they said, would you rather go with us or go out on your own? She said, I was traumatized. I said, but I'm Anne Klein. I designed Anne Klein longer than Anne Klein did. And that was sort of the end of that conversation. But I thought that was pretty interesting that they gave her an ultimatum. Like after all of those years of her working for them, they kind of were like, listen, if you want to do your own thing, you're not going to do your own thing and work here. If you're going to do your own thing, it's going to be for us, not for Donna Karan. If you want to do that, go do that or stay here and work under Anne Klein. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And, she says that she was traumatized by that, which anybody would be. You know, if you're comfortable in working somewhere and all of a sudden you're given an ultimatum because you're slightly branching out. I mean, I could see why she was traumatized by that, but I think it shows strength and ambition that she was still willing to go out on her own and not afraid. She also speaks to correcting the fashion calendar. Now, if you know Donna Karan and have watched her interviews, I'm sure you've heard her mention correcting the god darn fashion calendar. She hates the way it is right now, and lots of designers agree with her, and I sort of agree with her too. I mean, the way everything is, it sort of doesn't make sense. So right now, she, in the interview, was sort of speaking to, like I said, correcting the calendar to make it more effective and make it work for the designers and make more sense for the consumers as well. She said that it's really simple. Do not deliver fall until September. She says, forget the business side. I know the difficulty that American designers have. To get what they need is literally almost impossible. We're shortchanged. There is no question about it. In the long run, we can't get fabrics or shoes, etc. We can't get what we need because of the Christmas holiday. Let's get clear on the availability, what there is to do, and the time there is to do it. I think that American designers accomplish brilliance relative to what their time scope is. We're using European fabrics and European manufacturers. They don't go back to work until January, and it's a bitch. That's what she said. That's exactly what she said. We're not showing the latest fabrics. Consumers are not seeing the newest fabrics, and you're not seeing the new anything. That's why Europeans wait. They wait until they get their fabrics. It all starts with yarn and fabrication. I can sit until I'm deathly blue in my face, but if the fabric is not available, I'm not going to get it. So she's saying, hey, we need to put a pause on everything because we're showing everything entirely too early on. So the consumer gets confused too because you're showing, like we just showed fall 2014 and we are in February 2014. So it's so far ahead. I think it also gives, you know, people the opportunity, other companies the opportunity to sort of knock off styles and things of that nature. So it's a whole sort of situation when it comes to showing styles too early that designers have issues with, which I don't blame them. Okay, let's talk about the selling of her company. In 2001, Donna Karan sold her company to LVMH Moët Hennessy Louis Vuitton, a French luxury conglomerate, for $600 million. Part of the agreement was to stay head designer. So her company was purchased for $600 million. $600 million. That's insane. That's an insane amount of money. So that was an amazing, amazing opportunity for her, in my opinion. And the agreement was for her to stay head designer, which is perfect. So she can still run her own company. And WWD sort of brought that up in the interview as well, asking her, LVMH bought your company for $600 million. Did the money change you? And she replied, no, that's the weird part about it. People say to me, you're Donna Karan. If people are really surprised that I am who I am, I have never been affected. I appreciate it. That's kind of what she had to say about it. Just saying that, hey, people still don't know me for who I am. So I think she still doesn't feel like she got like maybe insane publicity for it. I don't really know where she's getting at with that, but she's saying that her fame hasn't changed since that happened and she appreciates it essentially, I think is what she's saying. Now let's talk about her philanthropy work and what she's been doing. She travels a lot around the world and she has a lot of good ideas and she does a lot for communities. She gets a lot of her inspiration, like other designers, from traveling as well. So she says that her dream is to build a center of change, a community of change where people come together who want to create change, a soulful community. She says it's a dream where life does not separate itself from fashion, from living, or from anything else like that, but to realize in a holistic way. It's really the final connection of the dots. I want to build a spa. I want to build a center of stage, an urban zen downtown. I need more buildings, but I have a whole dream. So WWD then asked, are you looking for investors? And Donna Karan replied, I'm looking for partners in crime, people of like mind who want to join this movement. It's a movement to say, okay, philanthropy and commerce, a soulful economy. It's people who really eat it, sleep it, breathe it, and drink it. In Haiti, there's a community of people who cared. Now I have West Elm coming to Haiti, which is really amazing. They've made a huge commitment. Tom's Shoes is building a factory. The reason why I keep saying it's Haiti is because it's only 3 hours away and it's easy to get to. Yes, I want to go to Africa. Yes, I want to go to India. I went to India and I went, oh my God, my soul was in the block printing, the hand printing, and seeing as a designer the endless possibilities of what I haven't even begun to touch. Women's Wear Daily also asked, does Donna Karan, the philanthropist, ever trump Donna the designer? She replied, no, never. The designer helps the philanthropist because a designer is able to give that into philanthropy. It's not either or for me. Let's take fashion and philanthropy and put it together. It's not a new idea. This is who I am. She's also won, and I kind of just looked this up, a few different awards too, which I wasn't really aware about. In 2003, she became the first American to receive the Fashion Group's International Superstar Award. The following year after that, she received the prestigious Lifetime Achievement Award from the Council of Fashion Designers of America. So I think that's pretty amazing that she has been getting recognized. She's had a great career. And she's continuing to do great things and nothing seems to be stopping her or holding her back. And I think that's pretty amazing and that's awesome. And I think that's something to sort of tip your hat to. It's pretty cool when you can see designers and celebrate designers who have had long careers and especially, you know, the very few designers who haven't sort of lost their head in their ego, you know, along with their success in fashion, which she clearly has not. She's very grounded. So I really love that about her. I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. And of course, stay tuned. We always have, you know, 10,000 plus listeners for each podcast, which is huge for us. And we want to keep it going. There aren't very many fashion podcasts out there. So we want, you know, people to continue to take it seriously and continue to support the show. So thanks as always. And I hope you guys have a fabulous week.
WWD Podcast. WWD Podcast.